Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. This version tonight is a shortened version. The visual version of this show can be seen at paraflix.com on December 17th, 2023. In the meantime, enjoy this show.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Care to join me this evening? Not only in a little bit of haunted intrigue, but how about meeting a actual haunted doll? Kevin Kane is my guest. He is a writer, an associate producer, lives in Alabama, and has published both fiction and nonfiction books. Some of his books include Dark Awakening, My Haunted Collection, My Haunted Collection, The Dark Side, The Legends of Indian Narrows, Ghostly Childhood Memoirs, Patty Doll, Tammy Baby, and Crimson, The Blood Painting. Kevin Kane is rather fascinating. He has a vast collection of haunted items, mostly haunted dolls, but including haunted paintings, toys, tools, and jewelry. He has inherited many of these objects from his investigations as well as from other paranormal investigators. His YouTube channel, called My Haunted Dolls, shares videos regarding his haunted items. Kevin also owns a haunted mannequin baby that was featured in an episode of Travel Channel's Ghost Nation, and an actual creature baby puppet used in the 1974 film It's Alive. Kevin was a very interesting guest this evening, and we also had the privilege of meeting one of his haunted dolls. So without further ado, let's get at it and let's meet my guest, Kevin Kane. Well, good evening, Kevin, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, very much welcome. And not only that, we are all in for a great surprise probably tonight, because I need to start out with just a quick shout out that before we started taping here, there has been some activity floating around in Kevin's room there in the background. So in the event that you might be watching, watch as closely as you can, because you will probably see what I'm talking about as the show goes on. That and the fact that it seems like every time I do a show, I am having more activity happen in both my guests and my own home. So here we go. And what more appropriate than talking to Kevin tonight, because he's going to talk to us about haunted dolls, haunted collections, objects, you name it. And I am absolutely thrilled to have you. So again, Kevin, thank you so much. Well, I think we're going to start out from the basics and the foundation here, like we always do. And I would like you to go back to the earliest time you recall. And I would like you to think about when you either had an experience or what brought you to your interest in what you do now.
The earliest experiences I had, I was probably 5 years old at the time. We lived in a neighborhood in West Jefferson County here in central Alabama, in an area that used to be Native American Cherokee territory. In fact, allegedly there were burial grounds there. The neighborhood right next to ours was called Indian Narrows, which was named for it being a Native American place there. And we would go through the woods and find arrowheads, broken pottery buried in the ground there. But with that came some ghost stories. The earliest I remember in our house, we did have some creepy experiences. And we would have footsteps walking up and down the hallway, day or night. We had footsteps in the attic, which was impossible because the attic was no bigger than 3 feet tall, which barely a crawl space. There's no way for anyone to, at least a human, to walk through the attic in that kind of space. But we had footsteps there. We had footsteps that would run up and down the stairs. And the creepiest was middle of the night. I would wake up. Sometimes I would hear a woman softly calling my name from across the house, Kevin. And it wasn't my mom. She was in the room. Their bedroom was next door and she was snoring. So I knew it wasn't her. And my sister was just a few years older than me. When I talked about it a little later, my sister said she also heard that voice, but it was calling her name. Neither of us were brave enough to get up and go see who was calling to us, nor should we, because who knows who or what that was.
That is absolutely terrifying in a way, because when you heard this voice come out of a soft, drifty kind of voice, and you hear that. Now, again, did you say you were about 5 years old at the time?
I was about around 5 years old.
Okay, and then how long did that last for? How often did you hear your name called? And how old were you at the last point that it may have been called?
It seems that as far as back as I can remember, that may have gone off and on for about a year and then the voice stopped. But we always heard footsteps and it would come and go sporadically. Not all year long, but just randomly during the year, just any day you might hear noise in the hallway. Even when I was in middle school, I would stay home by myself during the summer when I was out of school, but too young to get a job. So I would do work around the house and just relax. And one day I was walking toward my bedroom. The air conditioner was not running at the time. The windows were all closed. I get right to my bedroom door, which is wide open, and it just slams shut right in my face. I'm thinking intruder or somebody has snuck in here and is pranking me. So I get ready and I turn the knob and throw the door open and jump into my bedroom, and there's no one there. I check the under the bed in the closet. It was a small room, really nowhere to hide except those two places. Could not find anything. Our little Shih Tzu doll would stand at, not doll, but our Shih Tzu dog would stand at the bottom of the stairs looking up where my parents, they built an additional room in the back of our house, which became their master bedroom. The dog would stand at the foot of the stairs looking up there and just barking at nobody. And then we'd hear footsteps run down toward him and he'd scamper away. But that kept on until my parents moved out in 2016. I think the last experience I had, I was about 20 years old. I was living out of the house, but I went back home for the holiday and was staying in the guest room that used to be my sister's room. And I woke up in the wee hours of the morning, some point around 4 o'clock in the morning. It was too early to get up. So I said, I'm going to go back to sleep. And I'm laying there and I hear the bedroom door open. I hear the knob turn click and it opens. And then before I can, raise up to look and see who that is, it shuts again. I didn't hear any footsteps. That floor in the hallway, you couldn't walk on that without it creaking or popping, making noises. No sound. So I went back off to sleep, and the next morning, daylight, I went into the kitchen and asked my dad if he or my mom came in to look in on me, and they said, nope, it wasn't us.
And this was
So,
the same house that you grew. This was the same house, right? How old?
yes.
Now, I know by now most of you should know, and I talk about it periodically, that you don't have to be in an older house to have it become haunted. You can live in a brand new apartment complex and which might be over something that could have been a cemetery or you name it, or something that might have gotten cursed, or an Indian burial ground or a very active location. I know that that's the case usually here and with the homes that I've been in. So are you, or were you in an older property home?
No, that house was built in 1970, 71, and my parents were the first to live there. Mm-hmm. In fact, that whole neighborhood was built there. They cleaned the woods away and built up the neighborhood. A lot of people, kids especially, like me, believed after, you know, we started sharing our experiences, it seemed like every house mm-hmm. had experiences. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends heard footsteps in their houses and the door, someone would knock and they'd go answer the door and nobody's there. Mm-hmm. So we would share our experiences, and we came to the conclusion that maybe, you know, the Native Americans who were there at one time didn't like that somebody came in and cleared away. And I found out years later that during that time, I think U.S. Steel was the company that mm-hmm. financed a clearing through there. They dug up one of the bodies, a Native American body, and the University of Alabama came and took it away, I guess, to study. And it seems like that might have stirred up something.
That would have stirred up something. I've heard this many times. I don't know if people are aware, but there are some that have the theory and the impression that once you die and you turn to dust, or whatever the case may be, in a cemetery, that, you know, people have their different perspectives on it, and so do I, and whoever goes hunting or researching in a cemetery. You know, it's interesting, but sometimes this stuff, that energy still exists in some way, whether there's a body there or not. So did you say you did research on the area to determine if it was a real active Indian or indigenous area at that time?
Well, I didn't do any research, but because we would find arrowheads and some of that old broken pottery. Yep. And the stories that were shared with us from the adults in the area, that's where we got the information from. I've never tried to research it, though. That would be interesting to see what I could find. But even in school around here, they always taught about the central area mm-hmm. here in Alabama. It was greatly inhabited by Cherokee Native Americans. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's not hard to find out about it usually online. But yeah, it would be probably fun to research it and see what could be found. And also, there's a lot of limestone in that area, and I've heard that limestone can cause a lot of increase in energy. I don't know a lot about rocks and that kind of energy, but that's something I found out too.
For those of you out there who have my book, there is a picture in there of my great grandfather built his homestead on a piece of land. And yes, it was ladled with limestone, and there was a tornado that went through, and a tree fell down, about a 200-year-old tree fell down on the property, but away from the house. And what we thought was really interesting about this was that every time a storm came through, this was out in a rural country, a storm came through and a tree fell down. Never once did a tree ever fall into that house. Now, whether they just kind of knew how the wind was back then, and, you know, which way this stuff would go. But when the tornado whipped through that area and that tree fell down, that is how I captured my great grandfather and also my great aunt in this screened window, which is in my book. And I show it at conferences and stuff like that. And it's a very clear image. And keep in mind that I was not able to see them at the time. I was there to photograph the property after the tornado and to photograph the house. And it just so happens that they were looking right at me from an upper window, very clear image. But that limestone, yes, is a conductor of energy and can light up a property like a Christmas tree. So you're onto it right there. That is correct. So, you know, so then I have to ask the question too, because a lot of people wonder about my guests. Are you in any way psychic, clairaudient, clairsentient, any of the, an empath, anything like that, where you might be attracting some of this stuff to you just naturally?
I've been told by other sensitives that I do have at least a partial sensitivity. I don't know if it was psychic or there's a little bit of empath in me, I know, because my grandmother and mainly my great grandmother were both empaths, mm-hmm. and my own mother could sense things about people. So my dad says there's no doubt in his mind that she was empathic. Mm-hmm. So some of that has been passed down. I don't toot my own horn enough about it, because I don't really, you know, I don't see solid spirits, or at least not since I was a child. And so I think to myself, well, I don't have enough to call myself a sensitive. I don't, you know, and I'm probably selling myself short there, because I seem to draw, especially child spirits, they seem to be drawn to me. Mm-hmm. And I taught for 9 straight years in my 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. I taught children at our church in the children's department, youth, and just fell in love with those kids. They were wonderful. And they always showed me a lot of love. And then it just seems like when I go in haunted places, if there are child spirits, they gravitate toward me.
Yep.
I've been in the Myrtles Plantation, where they say at least 3 little girl spirits haunt that house. And the second or third time I was there, I was taking the free tour with my stay, and I'm standing there listening to the guy, and there's other people there, and I feel a little hand suddenly grab onto both sides, my left and my right hand, like there was a child on each side took hold of my hand, and they held on for several minutes as we were going through the house. Mm-hmm. So I could sense there were 2 of those little girls there. One I saw in my room. I stayed in the suite. Mm-hmm. And saw her peek around the door frame at me when I was sitting in the chair in the sitting area. Mm-hmm. And you know, most people might jump up and run, but not me. I stood up and said, "Oh, come on in." And she, you know, disappeared. And I got up and tried to go after her. I'm like, "No, wait, come back." Mm-hmm. I like to run toward it instead of away from it.
Which room did you stay in? I was there as well.
Oh, it was, I think they call it the Bradford Suite, the downstairs.
Was it in the house or was it outside of the house?
This was inside the house.
Okay. I was on, I can't remember which one it was, on the veranda. It was kind of like on the outside of the house, and it was some general's one. And they did.
That's it.
Okay, they did capture in front of that door, because the minute you said you were in this thing and you saw them peek around, it's like, I don't think there were too many of them except mine, the same one that we might have been in. I think it was, I was in the same one. And they did capture something about 4 feet tall, kind of, it was a white image, kind of floating in the air, basically at about 4 to 5 a.m. This was a guest that was also there, and she was looking at her photographs. I don't know how she must have had a digital or something at the time. And I went over to look at it. She said, "I'm not sure what I'm looking at here." And I said, "Well, you have a capture." She said, "Well, it was right outside your door at about 4 to 5 a.m. And my husband, in that same room, by the way, heard, we put out coins. And so he heard the coins clinking at a certain time. I didn't see or know of any children that were in there, but I was terrified. And I don't know why, probably because I probably wouldn't be as terrified. I guess they said that at one point there's also an army. Sometimes they hear horses outside the window and an army that kind of marches through that room. So that's interesting. You had a young gal peek around the corner in there.
Yes. And yeah. She looked about 4 feet. I figured she was not quite probably older than toddler, maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And she had this long curly brown. I just saw her for like 2 seconds. Long curly brown hair, and just this part of her dress, like a green ruffled mm-hmm. sleeve. And when I went in the kitchen area, the old kitchen area the next morning. It was before the original burned down. Mm-hmm. They were having breakfast, and I mentioned seeing the little girl. And before I described her, the lady said, "Oh, the woman with the green ruffled dress." I was like, "Yeah, there you go. That was her." So yeah. You know about her. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She said, "We had a psychic lady stay there just last month and said, when she was in the bathroom, they were putting her makeup on the whole time. The little girl was peeking around, watching her mm-hmm. Put her makeup on."
I think that place, I captured some things outside, but I, the place in itself, what creeped me out probably more than anything was at about 8 or 9 o'clock at night when they all went home. Here we all were without basically no supervision or anybody in on main office or anything. It's like, well, we're going home now. Good luck to you. And that was the part that creeped me out too, because I thought, well, what on earth, what will happen if, something here happens? There's nobody at a desk or anything. But I remember when we checked in, the woman gave the keys to my husband and said, "You see that room over there? That's yours. Well, have a nice day." And what she normally would have brought somebody to the room, opened the door, kind of explained things a little bit. But she was probably just so sick of bringing people to the rooms anyway. I just thought it was fascinating. Did you do it? What time of year did you go?
I went, my first visit, I remember, was early November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I went back. I was so fascinated. I went back early the very next year. That was 2004 and 2005. Mm-hmm. And then I went again, and I started almost making a yearly pilgrimage. It's been a while, but yeah. It's always been one. The last time I went, it was springtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And that last time was when I saw the little girl in the doorway, and I went to bed that night, and I woke up the next morning. What they reported happened to me. Woke up with the covers pulled up and tucked around, a lot tighter than I would have done myself.
Yeah.
And when I sat up, they had at the time, they might have replaced it now, but they had this thick, almost shaggy carpet in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you walk across, you see footprints. I look down, I see mine from the night before.
Yeah.
But then I see little bare feet, like a child's feet, had walked to the bed. And then turn around and walked back.
Yep.
So maybe that little girl came in instead of the servant lady, Chloe, that usually does that. Maybe the little girl came and checked on me and tucked me in.
How did you manage to get into haunted items and collections and stuff like that?
Well, when I started collecting, the first doll I received, it was after I'd already become a paranormal investigator. I was an investigator first, starting in 2003. I kind of went out on my own to visit other haunted places. By then, I'd had my own childhood experiences. I forgot to tell the story about the first solid apparition I saw when I was about 4 years old. But from there, I said, I want to visit other places. We had an author here named Catherine Tucker Windham, who used to write ghost stories here, and she's since passed away. But I used to read her stories, and she'd go to schools and tell stories to the kids. And so that, combined with my experiences, made me want to go and visit these places she had talked about. So I started out here in Alabama, some of the haunted locations here. And then I started, my brother came along with me a few times. Other times I went by myself, which I wouldn't recommend that if you're not an experienced investigator. Don't go alone.
Right. No.
But I didn't know at the time, but luckily I was okay. And I didn't go anywhere dangerous, but me and my brother, I think the first out of state place we went was in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. We stayed at a haunted bed and breakfast in I can't remember the name of the town, Monk's Corner, South Carolina, Rice Hope Plantation. Mm-hmm. And I had some experiences there. I felt a spirit in the room, and it's supposed to be a little girl named Mistress Chicken. Mm-hmm. And she apparently loves the nickname they've given her, because she actually clucked in my ear as I was trying to go to sleep. And at that time, I hadn't quite built up my nerve like I have now. So I chickened out, pulling the covers down to look and see if I could see her.
Yeah.
But she clucked in my ear like a chicken, let me know she was there. But anyway, we started there, and just I've been Tennessee, Georgia, all the way over to California. I've been on the Queen Mary and done a daytime investigation when it was slow, and they let us roam around, and I've caught a picture in the hallway where the suites used to be. It's now hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. And in the picture, you see at the top of the picture, it's like the bottom half of a little dress, like if it was a child or a small lady floating up out of frame. And I just managed to capture, you can see her little feet in the dress.
That's interesting. That's floating up, right?
Yes, above the camera. And this is after the tour guide had said on the decks below that another visitor had captured a little girl floating in a dress in one of their pictures.
Interesting.
So that got me started, you know, wanting to join a paranormal team. So I joined Scare of Alabama to learn about the technical side of it, the equipment. And that was back around 2013. And then a friend of mine at work who was getting ready to leave on disability and didn't think she would have long to live was giving out some of her personal items. Mm-hmm. And she told me, I hear you love ghosts. I hear you're one of these ghost people. I said, yeah, I'm with a paranormal team. We investigate here locally and help people with hauntings. And she said, well, I have this haunted doll. Well, first thing I'm thinking, first I thought of the Annabelle, the real life doll. Then I thought about the scary Chucky, you know, on TV mm-hmm. running around with a knife. And I'm like, right. Are you crazy?
Right.
Because I automatically thought negative. You
right.
know? She's like, oh, no, no. This is just a porcelain doll that has a story with it. She said, I didn't believe it was haunted when I bought it at the estate sale, but I've had some weird experiences. Mm-hmm. And she told me the story of what would soon be my very first haunted doll, mm-hmm. the lovely little Patty doll. And she's this, I don't remember the brand name, but she's this little doll they came out with in the mid-80s that she's porcelain and she's in this crawl position with her head tilted, this mm-hmm. cute little smile with her little hands up mm-hmm. and wearing a bonnet. And she's not very big, you know, about that long. Mm-hmm. And she showed me a picture of it. And she said, you know, I bought this in Michigan and it was at an estate sale. And the man there told me, now this doll is supposed to have a ghost with it. And he said it belonged to a little girl that was the daughter of a prostitute.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And her mother didn't take very good care of her. She was apparently, they were somehow related to this family whose family member had passed away and had the doll. But he said the mother of this child, Patty's mother, didn't give her any toys. They lived in poverty. And one of the neighbors felt bad for her and bought her this doll. And it was around 1986. Mm-hmm. And that's around the time this doll would have been brand new in the stores. Mm-hmm. So she bought Patty that doll. And Patty loved it and had it with her all the time. You know, and she couldn't play with it because it was, you know, glass arms and legs and head mm-hmm. and cloth body. But she carried it with her everywhere and slept with it next to her bed. So one night her mother left her alone to go off and be with a client, and little Patty got hungry and was looking for a snack and found a bag of what she thought was some of her mom's candy, and she ate it. It looked like, you know, probably to her looked like Skittles or something, but it was actually drugs her mother had taken as payment from a client. So Patty went to bed sick and didn't, they assumed she must have gone to bed sick, but they know the next day she didn't wake up. She was dead. And from what the man told my friend at the estate sale, it was the neighbor took the doll back, you know, as something to remember that little girl by, and she started hearing little footsteps in her house. So she quickly got rid of it. Mm-hmm. But everybody that's had it, including this man, it might have been that neighbor's family member, including this man who was at this estate sale. He said, we've heard little footsteps and little girl's voice, so I'm just letting you know, buyer beware. And she said, oh, shut up. Give me the doll. Here's my money. She yeah. didn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
She gets it home, and it's maybe a week later, her daughter comes to visit with her little granddaughter, a little four-year-old girl. And the granddaughter would go in the room where her grandma's, you know, antiques and dolls and everything were. And she was in there for a little bit and came back out and told my friend, she said, Grandma, little girl in there playing with a doll.
Oh boy.
And she said, what? There's no little girl in there. And she went to look and there's nobody in there. But she said her little granddaughter kept saying little girl. Mm-hmm. And then she herself finally started hearing little footsteps. She'd hear a little girl's voice singing in that room at nighttime when nobody was in there. Mm-hmm. So she'd go to look, the singing would stop.
Right.
So she said, now that I, you know, might not be around so long, my daughter will not take the doll. She's scared of it.
Right.
And she said, if you want it, I said, and I wasn't sure I was buying this because I didn't know what to think about haunted dolls. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, this would be a great conversation piece to have a haunted doll. I can brag to my team and say, hey, come over, let's investigate this. So she brought it to me. I took it home. And that first day in my townhome, where absolutely no activity had ever happened before, I took a picture of the doll, you know, different angles. And in one of the pictures, this perfect shiny ball of light or orb, if you want to call it that, was hovering right over Patty's head.
Yeah.
So I figured if it was dust, you'd probably see different specks or it'd be faint. This was just like a perfect solid orb with a, like an outer ring around it. And just looked too strange to put off as dust or a bug. And so I said, there's something with this doll. So I said, I'm going to have to test this sucker out. So I started leaving out a voice recorder. Wasn't catching anything. I started staying up late at night. Originally, in my younger days of investigating, I always thought, well, you got to be late at night, but you can catch stuff during the day, too. It could be any time of day. But at the time, I was like, I'm going to do it late at night and see what happens. And I did, I think, two or three voice recordings with my voice recorder, just me talking to this doll, trying to talk like it's, you know, me talking to a child, telling her stories, singing songs to her, sound like a complete idiot on the recording. But, you know, something to get this girl to respond. And it took a few tries. And one night, her third week in my townhome, I did a 30-minute recording. And I'm playing it back the next day, listening to myself half asleep at 1 o'clock in the morning is when I had taped that. And I'm just thinking, I sound like a fool, and this thing probably is not haunted. That orb was just a coincidence, and blah, blah, blah. And I get to the end of the recording, and it's the last few seconds when I tell her on the recording, I say, well, I got to go to bed now. Got to go to bed, sweetie pie. Good night. And right there before I click the off button, you hear a little girl's voice, righteous.
Oh, my.
And you should have seen me listening to this the next morning. I came out of my chair.
Yeah, literally.
I was so excited. I said, oh, my gosh, it's real. There is a ghost with this doll. And she said, righteous. In fact, in the 80s, we used to say that a lot. In the 70s, you know, kids back then. That fits. And this child sounds like a seven-year-old talking righteous. And I'm just, and then I'm it's mixed. I'm excited. Then I'm starting to think, what the did I just bring into my house?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And you still have that doll, right?
I do. I'm never going to give her up. Yeah. It'll be after I'm dead and gone.
Does that doll, but, do you investigate that doll at all to this day, or do you know when it's active?
Yes. And it could be any time. It seems like every time I do something with her, I used to, when she was the only item I had, I would have her out every night. When I was watching TV, she'd be sitting on the table because I want to see what's going to happen. But I have so many now, it's hard to do that with just one individual all the time. But yeah, I've done other spirit box videos. There's several of hers out there. Just last year, I had her on my bed with the spirit box going and the little cat ball. It's a little round toy ball that lights up when you touch it. And we use that during investigations sometimes, especially if there might be a child around. And on the video, I've got it. She set the cat ball off for me. It was sitting right next to her doll. And I said, oh, thank you, Patty. And on the spirit box, you hear her giggle in response. And I've caught her little giggles before when I've been holding her doll and doing a video. One time I was holding her doll at nighttime. I had the night vision on. I'm looking at the camera and I'm about to do a session. And right at the beginning, I say, Patty, when I turn the spirit box on, you come close and speak and you can hear me. Okay. And on the video, you hear a little girl go, okay.
Oh my God.
So, you know, and I felt tugs on my shirt. When I first, you know, got her doll, I would feel tugs. I would hear giggles and hear tapping on my wall.
Wow.
So those are other experiences I had with her as well. But that got me started. I said, I got to find out more about these haunted dolls then, because I didn't know how to take care of this doll and everything. And I got to know other collectors online, Facebook pages, websites. And I started talking to people locally. I didn't know there were other haunted doll collectors near me in Georgia and another one here in Alabama. They started rehoming items to me. They said, well, Patty could use a friend, you know, so they started sending me things they've collected. And now, and I've gotten to know people in other states, even around the world. I've got some from the UK. I've got some from Australia. And I've collected over 300. I lost count somewhere right before 300.
The question would come to you as to how do you know that the ones that are acting up at least positively around you aren't in some way some kind of a trickster? How can you tell the difference, or can you?
For me, I can, only because I've, you know, had partial sensitivity. When I get around something negative, and I have had a few items. In fact, I have my own Annabelle type doll in this collection that is sealed up in a case with holy water that came from Baton Rouge. She came from Baton Rouge, and she was much like Annabelle. She was causing scratches, nightmares, things like that. When an item like that comes to me, or if I get around a spirit like that, I start feeling nauseous. And I know right away. Sometimes I'll get chills, and sometimes if it's really bad, I'll get both. And that's when I say, yeah, there's something wrong. We investigated an old grist mill about 20 or 30 minutes from my house, where the grist mill itself was perfectly fine and we got some great activity. It's haunted by the original owners. It was built before the Civil War, around 1800. And they're very pleasant spirits. But then there's also, like much of Central Alabama, there's a lot of Native American ground. But when I was walking through, they have an old covered bridge there you can walk on that's been around for well over 100 years. They don't let anybody drive on it anymore, but you can walk over it. It's had some activity. And when we went out there to investigate, I felt right next to me this young male Native American spirit. He just kept looking at me. And I just felt, as the way I can explain it, I felt that he was there to watch over me. And he sort of hung back, and I couldn't visually see him. It was like in my mind, I was sensing it. And we get to the woods, and I find out why he was there. We get in the woods behind the grist mill that's supposed to be haunted by Native American spirits, and we start hearing drums. And we caught it on audio. One of our team members had a really awesome mic set up, and he caught audio. And they're all getting excited, but I start getting that nauseous, shaking feeling. And I start hearing a woman screaming in the distance. And I'm asking everybody, are you not hearing this woman scream? No, we just hear these drums. And suddenly, I just get this visual of this huge black entity charging through the woods at us.
Oh, no.
And right next to me, that in my mind, I'm seeing that Native American spirit. And he, in plain English, says, I think you should leave now.
Wow.
I start telling my team leader, I'm tapping her. I said, Kim, I said, we got to go. We need to get out now. We got to go. We need to leave. Boy, we're not done with the session here yet. I said, Kim, we got to go. And she could see how serious I was getting. And I turn around. I always wear this blessed crucifix. So when they weren't moving fast enough, I just grabbed my crucifix and I started praying the Lord's Prayer and just praying a hedge of protection around us. And all of a sudden, Kim, I guess, started getting sensitive about something, because she goes, you know, it's kind of getting colder out here. Let's go ahead and pack it up and get out of here. I'm like, thank God. And we're going through the woods back out. And as soon as we get out of the woods, I feel so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I was just like mouth running 90 miles an hour all the way back to the grist mill about what I had sensed.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I just didn't pick up on that. I said, yep, there's something did not like us out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I heard a woman scream. In my mind, I kept picturing a woman being chased by a group of men.
Mm-hmm.
Something nasty happened out there that left something evil behind.
Yeah.
And I swore I'd never go back to those woods again. But last year, the year before, during daylight, when my dad and my brother moved down here, we went out there so I could show them the grist mill and just to see what would happen. It was daylight, of course. I walked through the woods and it was peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
I still felt like I was being watched, but I didn't feel, you know, the entity, the black entity, you know, in there. But on my recording on video, somebody, a man behind me, you could hear them whistling
mm-hmm.
when I'm standing there talking and telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear a whistle and it comes over the cameras. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So now that you have haunted dolls, did you ever get into haunted items as well?
Yes. I got the first haunted items I received were dolls, the first several. And the following year, I got my first other than dolls type of item, I call it. And this was a sort of a large old copy. I mean, it's antique painting, but it's a copy of the original, not the original, of course, because that would be in a museum.
Yeah.
But it's a painting of Jenny Lind, an opera singer that was famous back in the mid 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this painting of her where she's like this pose, looking off the side, not, you know, straight, but
mm-hmm.
turned and looking this way.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady contacted me on my Facebook site. She had tried to sell it,
mm-hmm.
but she was truthful and said haunted painting and nobody would buy it.
Right.
So, but she reached out to me and said, I just want to get rid of it. It's locked in my shed.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I heard that, I thought, this, you know, so far I've had nice, sweet dolls. Why is she locking this thing in the shed?
Right.
So I asked her to tell the story, and she said she had been in a shop. She was in San Francisco, I believe. She lived near there, and she was in an antique shop. The lady working there totally went crazy on her, pointing at this painting, saying, you should buy this, buy.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, no, I'm not looking for a painting, but thank you. No, you buy. It was like the lady really wanted to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she looked at it and said, well, it would look nice in my dining room. And it wasn't very expensive. So she went ahead and bought it. Well, she hangs the painting up in her dining room. And some days go by, she starts noticing, at least her report to me was, I started noticing that the face would change. Sometimes she'd be smiling and sometimes she'd be frowned up. Sometimes she'd have this poker face, but she would have a different facial expression. So she thought, well, it's an old painting and they used to make them realistic back then. Maybe it's just an optical illusion. You know, I'm seeing things. So
right.
She didn't think anything about it. Well, then when her company would come over, her guest would also say, you know, that painting is weird. It's creepy that you have hanging up in there. The face keeps changing. And I feel like it's watching me, even though it's not looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And the last straw, she said, was when she was sitting in the dining room one night at the table doing some bills. And she just looked up at the painting because she felt like, you know, it was watching her. And she just kept looking at it. And she swears, and I have nothing to back it up, but she swears that as she was looking, Jenny Lind in the painting suddenly turned and looked at her.
Oh, my God.
And she just automatic response flew out of her chair, knocking it backwards. And she rushed to the wall and slapped the painting off the wall. And it landed on the floor with a thud. She said, I'm lucky it didn't break. But she said, I panicked.
Face first, by the way. Oh my God. How big was this painting about?
It's about, you can't see my hands in the frame. It's about 3 feet high in height and width. It's almost 2 feet. It's kind of, it's like an oval shaped, pretty big picture. And it's kind of heavy, but it's just a copy of Jenny's painting, but it's in this old antique frame. The frame itself, somebody looked at it and said they thought it might be worth about $200,
yeah.
even as a copy. But yeah, she luckily didn't break, but she grabbed it and dragged it, she said, out of the house and put it in her shed out back. Mm-hmm. Her tool, we call them sheds here. Mm-hmm. Her tool house, I think she called it, out back, and locked it in there. And mm-hmm. she would not go back in there to it. And she was trying to sell it. So she shipped it to me. I mean, I know when somebody's seriously scared of something, when they don't ask for any money and then they ship it mm-hmm. as fast as they can.
Yeah.
She priority that sucker, FedEx. And I get home. This was in summertime, hot Alabama weather. I get home that day and I saw on tracking her package that arrived. I was excited. I couldn't wait to break this panty out, see if it, if yeah. I could see the yeah. head turning or something.
Yeah.
So, but it's hot out and anything left out is going to get hot too.
Yeah.
So I got home as quick as I could. And luckily the delivery man had put it against the wall, kind of out of sight. Yeah. We had a good delivery guy there. He would try to keep porch pirates away. But it was also in a place where the sun wasn't on it, but it was still hot.
Right.
And I get up there, and I'm thinking, I hope it's not hurt. And I get it inside and get to the living room, and I cut it open. As soon as the outside of the box is warm. It's very warm.
Yeah.
As soon as I open the flaps, this just gust of cold air just out, like, you know, like if you open a grill and smoke comes out, but this mm-hmm. is air, not smoke. It's like, whew. And I reached and pulled it out. The panty was freezing cold. Mm-hmm. Now it's 90 something degrees outside. I'm like, how in the world did this thing stay this cold in this cardboard box? Mm-hmm. And I pull it out, and again, it's just a panty, cardboard and wood. And I had my gear there on the coffee table ready to go when I got home. I'd set it out before leaving for work that day. I pick up my K2 and turn it on, and it's going crazy next to this painting. Mm-hmm. And I hold it away, and it stops. I hold the painting. It's going crazy. There's nothing electrical or mm-hmm. Wi-Fi about this painting. This is just cardboard and wood. So how's it setting a K2 meter off? Mm-hmm. So I hung her up, and I just kept watching her. I would just watch that thing waiting. And it almost looked like if you look long enough, you could see the corners of her mouth kind of wiggle. Mm-hmm. And I thought, maybe it's just me. And I'm thinking like that lady did. It's just me. I'm imagining it. I want to see something. And I'm making this happen in my mind.
Right.
But I had one of my team members come by. She's very sensitive. And she sensed, you know, there's a lady with this painting. It's not Jenny Lynn, but there's a lady. And I don't know why. I don't know if she owned it. But there is a woman here. And she's not going to talk to me, but if you try to talk to her, she might answer you. Mm-hmm. And she took a series of photos on her digital, and then we looked at the picture. Every picture, that mouth was different. It was smiling, slyly smiling, frown, straight, just every picture was different. Mm-hmm. Now, it's one thing to look at it and think you're seeing things, but when it's in pictures mm-hmm. and you can see the mouth is different every time, mm-hmm. that's odd. Mm-hmm. So I set up my camera the following weekend to do a nighttime. I wanted to do nighttime so I could do my night vision to make it look really cool. Mm-hmm. And I did my spirit box, and she was very talkative, this woman on the spirit box. I asked her name. She said her name was Hilda. Very polite voice. Mm-hmm. Hilda. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what is your last name? Michelson. Hmm. So I'm jotting this down. You know, I'm taking this down now. I want to look to see if I can research this name. And I believe I asked her, and I have the video on YouTube. It's early in the channel, several years ago, one of my earlier videos. I think I asked her what, I said, why are you with this painting? But that one I didn't get a response with. But the one then, it was my first time hearing a full sentence from the spirit box. I said, how did you die? And she responded, you'd have to find my body.
Oh, no.
Now, for anyone that doesn't know what a spirit box is, this is a box we investigators use that scan, mm-hmm. I think it's 5 radio stations per second. So it's like a noise. Mm-hmm. We call it white noise. Mm-hmm. There's no way to even barely get a full word, much less a sentence off the radio. And so that was not radio. I know that. And it was the same voice answering me every time. But I felt like the way she said it, it wasn't, I need you to go find me. It was more like a, I don't know, you'd have to find my body if you want to know that answer. Because it seems like she didn't really care. At least that's the feeling I got off of her. But I've not long after that, I found out she's quite the housekeeper and nanny to my ghost children. Because the sofa was sitting right next to where her painting was. I mean, the end of the sofa, look up the wall there, there's her painting. And I had these throw pillows. And one night I was laying there watching TV and Waller, you know, kind of rolled around a little on the sofa and, you know, tossed the pillows on the floor. Well, it got late and I went to bed. And next morning I got up and it's one of those days where I've got to hit the road and get to work because I overslept a little. Didn't bother even picking the pillows up off the floor. And I was going to have company that evening after work. So I get home thinking I'm going to make sure, you know, I better fix those pillows and, you know, get the sofa all fresh and everything. And I get in there and the pillows are off the floor on the sofa. Not only are they on the sofa, but there's one on each side and just angled so perfectly. So like a, like if a decorative type person were stepping back and, you know, making sure everything was perfect.
Did you say that you had photographed pictures of this painting as you started to notice maybe different features with the lips?
Yeah, my friend did on her camera. I don't think she never did send me the pictures, but yeah, she took pictures and I saw them on the display as she was going back through them. And you could see some of them were just regular, but there were some in there where the, you know, the mouth was different. It was the smile was normally it's got just a slight smile, but there was some of the smile was gone. Like, you know, almost like she was like, okay, that's enough pictures.
Yeah.
That's, you know, what my friend felt like. She's like, I think she wants me to stop taking pictures.
So I want you to introduce to us right now your little gal there, if she's willing to be with us for just a few moments. I kind of want to showcase her. Do you get a sense from her at all that she's okay, or do you think she's a little shy?
Yeah, no, she's definitely giving me the, ooh, I've been waiting on this vibes.
Oh, so she is excited to be have her debut.
Okay. Oh yeah, she's been, you know, been on camera before and hasn't, you know, given me nightmares or anything about it. So
all right, but, so everybody, we're going to introduce you to, what would you like, what's her name?
I just call her Shirley because she has not given me a name yet, although we've had a little activity. We had some spirit box responses that I believe it was a little girl, but we never got a name. But she set off the cat ball and the K2 meter.
And explain to everyone a little bit about her eyes, because yes, I think I do recall back in the day when they were making some of these dolls that they would put in certain colors for eyes, but explain to everybody why her eyes are red.
They manufactured these dolls back in the, well, they may have started in the 80s, but I know for sure in the 90s, they started putting out dolls, including these new replica Shirley Temple dolls. And some of them had the normal brown eyes, but they would start putting like red, like pinkish red eyes like this, or these neon green eyes. And there's another series called the Amelia doll. In fact, on YouTube, if you look, there's a famous haunted doll out there called Amelia. That's one of those dolls. It's got these bright green neon eyes. And I've got two of those dolls. Both have given me a little activity. But the legend, and people have asked me about this one, is that what happened to her? The legend with the Amelia doll is they claim that the eyes were just brown until it became possessed and suddenly it turned green. But I actually talked to the Amelia manufacturer, well, online. I chatted with somebody who was familiar with that company. They said, no, those were manufactured that way. And I found a bunch of them out there on eBay. They're selling them. Some have the neon green, some have the bright blue eyes, some have the pink eyes like this, or reddish pink, and almost a neon color, so it looks really creepy. So I debunked the legend of the eyes changing from being possessed, but you know, it doesn't mean they're not actually haunted. But yeah, this one was manufactured that way. I don't know if I can get her close enough to the camera, but you can see her eyes were not painted or anything. It's actually under the glass. The coloring is designed on the, what do you call it, the irises of the eyes.
And she, you know, from me to this young little gal here, you certainly look very beautiful, and you have a very pretty dress on, and you have a very nice smile, and I like your hair. And so we are very pleased to have you on the show and making your debut worldwide. Again, probably it sounds like you've been on some shows before, but our pleasure here is in meeting you. And so... so you get a real good vibe off of this doll, right?
Yes, I never felt anything negative. And she came from Virginia. My friend Kayleen, who lives over there, went to a, I guess someone she knew, a friend of hers, one of their relatives died and had an estate sale. And she saw all these dolls, including this one. She started sending me photos. You want me to buy one of these for you? And she sent me a photo of this. And these were apparently in an old historic home, I think, over there, sort of an older home. I don't know if it was a mansion, but it was one of those older homes. So Kayleen didn't have, I asked her about that. I said, you know of any history of that house? And she didn't know of anything. It would have been cool to know if this came from a haunted house. But just something about those eyes.
And, you know, the thing is, people are wondering, like, does the energy go inside the doll? Is the energy on the outside body of the doll? What's your understanding of that?
From what I feel and what I've gotten gathered from the spirit boxes and other people who've dealt with the haunted dolls, who have sensitivity and can actually feel what they're feeling, they're not going to be trapped inside the doll. You know, let me out, let me out. They're just more like with it, just... I explain to people, like, think of, you know, how if a ghost haunts a house, it's just there and it can come and go. Well, it's the same with these dolls and other items. They're just kind of there. They're around it. They're attached to it, if you want to use that word, and a way, in such a way, like with Patty, that was, that doll was her favorite toy. So her spirit seemed to kind of latch on to it and go where it went. Because it was something familiar to her. And I have several items that were actually owned by the spirits who were haunting them.
Why don't we tell people a little bit about how they can either get a hold of you or see some of your YouTube videos or buy some of your books. Take it from there.
Yes, definitely you can go to my website, myhauntedolls.com. I do have a shop there with all of my books, and it's... What's so special is you, if you order from there, you can get them autographed. I autograph them and personalize them from there. But I do have all the books. I have some merchandise like baseball caps, bumper stickers, just fun things like that. And there's also links to my programs. I have the YouTube channel, My Haunted Dolls. You can follow the link to that or just on YouTube. I know the link to it is youtube.com/C, like cat, / My Haunted Dolls. I'm not sure why the C is in there, but it's still kind of easy to get to. And then, so you can go out there and watch the videos I've talked about. There's a lot of videos out there. And we have archived the live shows I used to do with Abnormal Alabama, talking about the strange and unusual around here. But,
And your books are on Amazon, aren't they?
Yes, the books are also on Amazon and Books A Million, Barnes & Noble. They're on Kindle. I actually do have a couple on audiobook, on Audible. One is my novel, Crimson, The Blood Painting, which is based on one of my haunted paintings here. And the other one, that one was narrated by an actress, but the other one I have is narrated by me. It's called The Legends of Indian Narrows, Ghostly Childhood Memoirs. So you can hear me tell the stories about the neighborhood I grew up in and my house, as I spoke of earlier in the show. And also I have a podcast, Podbeam, but you can also find it on Audible and those other places. It's called the Haunted Collection. And every couple of weeks, I post a 20 to 30 minute episode, just me sharing my favorite ghost and horror stories every time, and urban legends as well.
Thank you, Kevin, very much for being on the show today.